But what's unique to each company are the behaviors that actually support those values. And those behaviors are defined by the people inside that organization and also by leadership setting an example of what does it mean to live and lead with this particular value.
Hello, and you're very welcome to episode 5 of the Leadership Discoveries podcast. And today I'm joined by Jess Pigoni. Jess is Managing Director at BW Consulting in Philadelphia. And BW Consulting is a boutique management consulting firm servicing the pharma and biotech industries. Jess, I love talking to you, and I'm really delighted that you joined me here today for this particular conversation. You're very welcome.
Shirley, as always, I love talking to you. I have been so looking forward to the opportunity to join you on the podcast. 5 is my lucky number, so I'm really excited that I'm on episode 5 as well.
Brilliant. Jess, can you tell listeners more about your background? Because you got a really interesting backstory, actually, you know, in terms of consulting, in terms of working in organizations, and you're also a tech founder. So can you tell the listeners a little bit more?
I have spent a little more than the last 2 decades working with pharmaceutical and biotech clients, all on the services side of the business. So my first 5 years of my career, I worked for medical communications and marketing agency organizations. The next 15-ish, I have really been focused on management consulting. What that often looks like for me specifically is working on the people side of projects. So organizational change, big transformation, how do you want to structure maybe a new division or business unit, all within that pharma and biotech space, but really thinking about how are we going to motivate the people that are working within these organizations to adopt these, you know, big transformational changes or new things that are happening or kind of become aligned to grow business in a specific way. And those learnings really sparked me to also start a tech company that's called Luna. And we're really focused on building connection and alignment across teams, because teaming in today's world, teaming is how things happen. We're always working in teams. We're collaborating globally. We are often working with people we've never met in person. We are constantly thinking about how do we accomplish these work goals. But underpinning that, in my experience, is that we need to build connection, belonging, and bonds between the people on those teams. And I guess my tech business is really focused on bringing that to life through technology. My consulting focus continues to be bringing that to life through services to these really innovative organizations in pharma and biotech.
And Jess, you also spent some time at that company we both know and love, Vynamic, as well. So you were actually in-house as well as chief people officer, weren't you?
100%. Yeah. So, you know, how could I forget, Shirley? So yes, I spent 8 years of my career working for Vynamic, which is an incredible, now global management consultancy. And I had the privilege of being the head of their life sciences practice, consulting with many clients there, and ultimately leading as their chief people officer. What that really meant was being at the helm of how are we motivating these incredibly talented people to deliver the best possible work for our clients? And then how are we supporting them in their career development overall, whether it is through training or new experiences or just that really values-based culture that I believe is so critical to creating and growing successful organizations?
Jess, just in case any of our listeners are not aware of Vynamic, it's absolutely worth looking them up. And under Jeff Dill, some extraordinary things have been done, particularly in that cultural space and value sense.
I forever will bleed green, as they say, because green is their brand color. It's a great organization, and I have a lot of respect for what Vynamic has built and where they're continuing to go.
Great. You just mentioned values, and you mentioned values-based organizations. And I'm really interested to hear your take around really embedding values in an organization, because I remember somebody telling me, and I don't know if it's a corporate urban myth or not, about an exercise they were doing where they put the values of the organization up on the wall, and they also put flip charts with about five other companies' values up on the wall, and then they asked their leadership teams to come in and pick out their own ones, and it wasn't a terribly successful exercise, let's put it that way. But from your perspective, what have you seen work really well in terms of embedding values?
You know, I think Vynamic is a great example of this, where values are at the forefront of the culture. We hear that buzzword, culture, all the time. What is company culture? And for a while, when, you know, let's say the pre-COVID era, we all thought culture was happy hours and foosball tables in the office. But really, how I would define culture is that it is the combination of your corporate values, your company values, and the behaviors that support those values. So when you think about values, a lot of companies have similar words that they use. You know, in that example that you shared, I bet you in many of them, integrity was one of them. I bet you that, you know, sometimes there's, you know, ownership or boldness or tenacity, or there's lots of words that we could, you know, that could be genericized really to any company. But what's unique to each company are the behaviors that actually support those values. And those behaviors are defined by the people inside that organization, and also by leadership setting an example of what does it mean to live and lead with this particular value. I think values play this critical role in organizations, especially, and maybe like more critically, because we can be operating in a global capacity or distributed capacity, or we're working on teams that aren't all in one location. You need to have a common language, and the values can start to build that. And then the behaviors that are expected in support of those values really bring it to life.
I think that's really interesting what you say, Jess, just about values, you know, being this common language as such, because I think in many ways, even when it comes to things like performance management, let's be honest, having an anchor or having a hook that, you know, really refers to what we're actually trying to do here is really, really important, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for example, if you as an organization value simplicity, let's say, then in your performance management process, you can ask questions around, like, or really rate someone based on their ability to simplify things that are often really complex. If you value simplicity, then like in your day-to-day interactions, you're also thinking about, how can we simplify this? Why have we had 12 meetings about the same topic? Is that simple, or are we overcomplicating? Are we over-engineering? So it can be a way to almost check, like, wait a second, like, are we really living that value right now? Or have we just let this take on a life of its own? And because you have that now common language to be like, I don't think we're living simplicity right now. And it really extends to all, you know, it can extend to the interviewing and hiring process. It can extend to the exit process. It can extend to the promotion process. You start to think about that word simplicity, and then you apply it across all of those areas. You start to see how a value, it really is critically important inside an organization, and how it can be really a guide for how decisions get made.
And I love that word. And I have to say, I haven't seen that word as a value in many organizations, actually, simplicity. And it's probably something that we should all think about in many, many ways. Jess, can I just ask you, just now that we're on this sort of subject of culture and ways of embedding values, how do you feel about surveys, culture surveys, company surveys? What in your experience works best?
Ooh, how long do you have, Shirley? I think feedback is always important. But I think the way we as corporations have sort of accepted this idea of, okay, well, we're going to do an annual engagement survey, to me is not good enough. I think we are missing the point, actually, of the surveys themselves, because it's only a look back at what has happened. And we probably missed a lot of opportunities to operate with some agility and really kind of like jump in when things were happening versus like, wow, this person's been festering on this frustration for, you know, maybe a whole year, because it could have happened right after the last survey. Like, annual surveying, I struggle with generally. I think that it can be a tool, but it can't be the only tool. I think more frequent surveying is more akin to the way the world is moving. Everything is changing so quickly. So I think like those almost like quick check-ins, and some organizations call these little like pulse surveys, kind of really like short, quick, you know, our attention spans are shorter these days. Like we, you know, we have the capacity to maybe answer five questions and then we're like bored with the activity. So I think brevity is important. I think that real-time nature is really important. So I like surveys when utilized in a way that is, you know, are like paired with agility. Kind of the big clunky annual engagement surveys, not sure how valuable they generally are.
Yeah. You're not a fan then, Jess?
Not a fan.
Okay, fair enough. Great answer. And just again, in terms of, you know, sticking with this whole area around culture and, you know, I know you talk about employee experience a lot, you know, even, you know, Luna is very much founded on that whole piece of that employee experience. And I'm just wondering, you know, for leaders who could be listening now at the moment, who have moved from everybody's at home working to people are working hybrid to I'd really like to get people back into the office now. And that dilemma and that conundrum that they're actually facing, maybe with people who don't want to come into the office, in fact, what should they be thinking of? You know, what are the critical things that need to be in their minds now at the moment?
I have a few maybe big points here, and then we can dive into any of them. But one is that as leaders, we need to remember every person on our team is likely looking for or needs something different from work. So it might be that you're looking for it to learn, to be able to get promoted. It might be looking for certain new experiences, maybe kind of diversify your skill set. It might be you're in sort of a balancer phase where you really don't, you're like, I want to get my job done. I want to do a good job, but I don't want to push anything. I just need to kind of keep things steady. And we have to kind of tailor the way we're engaging with each individual based on what they're looking for, what they want to accomplish. And sometimes when we're kind of in this hybrid back in the office phase, we're forgetting to check in to be like, hey, what's really like making you happy right now? And what's really frustrating you right now? And sometimes the frustrations or the happinesses are logistical things like where I get to work, when I get to work. Sometimes they're like job specific things that are like, what's really frustrating me that I've been asked to do this bit of the job that I didn't think was my job and I don't like it. So I think those check-ins, like what's really making you happy? What's really frustrating you? So you can, as a leader, tailor to that individual. I also think there isn't a replacement for in-person interactions. There isn't. There is value, absolute value, to being together in an office. Where that has broken down in the last couple of years is that it's like these mandates come back to the office. People go through often grueling commutes to get there. And then they sit on Teams meetings or Zoom meetings inside an office for 8 hours. And then they do a grueling commute home. And so that is an utter fail.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the point of the office. The point of the office is that you're engaging with people in real life, that you're like interacting and that you have the chance to have some spontaneous connections with people maybe you're not otherwise having meetings with when you're in that office environment. So my challenge to leaders would be, if you want people in the office, make sure there's a reason for them to go. So maybe there's a, you know, every day there's something unique and interesting that's happening. It could be Tuesdays you have a taco lunch for everybody, or there's once a week there's an executive in the organization is having just like a lunch and chat where you can like kind of like bring your own lunch in and ask questions of that particular leader, or there's something interesting or a reason to come to the office. So interesting, in fact, that when you go home and your friend or your partner or your family says, "How was your day?" you tell them about that thing. So kind of think about like what's going to be the memorable moment that happens inside the office that's going to make people like, "Oh, I want to go in for that because it's going to be worthwhile." And then pair that with, if people are expected to be in the office, create blocks of time set up your meetings so that if you're in the office, these meetings are only in person. So like the people, you know, save your not office days for those virtual meetings. And when you're in the office, you're having either meetings in real life, or you've kind of blocked some time off where there aren't meetings, sort of meeting free mornings, for example, where you're then people are able to get work done and also potentially interact and sort of network within the office environment.
And I love that phrase, Jess. I'm going to remember that one, creating memorable moments for people, you know, when they do come in and, you know, meet their colleagues. I think that's fantastic. I love that phrase. I'm just wondering one thing, you know, you were talking about Luna and you were talking about teaming and you were talking about, you know, how people essentially work in teams. And I'm just wondering, is it possible to be effective as a team remotely?
100%. BW Consulting, we are management consultants focused on consulting within pharma and biotechs, more specifically within the cell and gene space. We do a lot of work around launching cell and gene products into the market. We do a lot of strategic planning work to help teams be effective at commercializing these really innovative products. You know, so we can have a totally separate podcast about cell and gene therapy because it is going to transform our healthcare system. But our team is 100% virtual. Sometimes we find those, you know, times to have in-person meetings and we make them memorable and we really prioritize being in person and not having this virtual component. But operating virtually is absolutely possible and can absolutely be really effective. But you have to focus on creating connection between people. And I use that word a lot. I almost think like, we're in the era where simplicity and connection should be values of every organization. Mm-hmm. Because when you're virtual, and if you jump into a meeting and you're like, okay, like here's what we got to get done, and this is what we're working on for the client, or this is what needs to be accomplished, and you never talk to people about who they are as a person, or you know nothing about their life in general, or you never stop to just say like, how are you? Then you're kind of missing this opportunity for connection, for connectivity. And we're human. We are absolutely like, we need connection. And when we feel isolated in these little Zoom boxes that we're in all day, and we don't feel like we have any connection, that's when we're likely to disengage and move on. So from a team standpoint at BW Consulting, we have biweekly all consultant meetings. We started off with some connection type of energizer or icebreaker, where we'll just ask everybody, like pre-Super Bowl, what we did was we said, the Super Bowl was coming up, and we were like, all right, what does everyone feel like their touchdown moment of the year has been so far? And some people were like, hey, I lost 5 pounds in January, and I feel like that's my touchdown. Then there were some people who were like, you know, I feel like this deliverable I created for the client was just like the best I've ever done. And that made me happy. And so those opportunities for connection are things you remember. And then you circle back to them and you can connect with people in that virtual environment. But without a level of knowing one another and appreciating that we're all more than just the work we're delivering at work, is without that, I feel like it all sort of falls apart in that virtual environment, especially, but really in any environment.
And what about trust, Jess, and the creation of trust? Because I know some of the subtext to, you know, what we've been through over the past couple of years in terms of workers wanting to get back into the office, aside from, you know, opportunities for collaboration, there has been a suggestion it's due to a lack of trust from leaders. Where do you sit on that? How do you feel about that? What are your thoughts?
It starts with connection. So it starts with like just building some synapses between people, but it is exponentially transformed by behaviors. So trust happens when people do what they say they're going to do. When you feel like someone has your back in a meeting, and those are the things, and that's addition, it's further connection building. Shirley, you and I have met in person, I'd venture to say maybe 2 to 3 times.
Yeah, that's right.
But I trust you completely because whenever you've said you're going to do something, you've done it. Hopefully, whenever I've said I'm going to do something, I've done it. We've shared with one another in an authentic way that has made it easy to feel trust.
Yeah.
And trust, you know, if you think about it, it breaks down when somebody deviates from that. And so that's gold inside of an organization. And for leaders in particular, building trust with your team is you're setting an example, you're setting expectations, but you yourself are living by them as well. I think it all ties back to a foundation of connection. You can't trust someone you know nothing about, but it's the, you know, kind of exponential growth of that connection based on the behaviors and how we're showing up every day.
And you know, it's funny because I think we went through a phase where authentic was sort of a fashion almost, you know, it was a fashionable phrase to talk about somebody as very authentic. And it's funny because I just haven't heard it in a little while and you mentioned it there. But it is absolutely true because we can make a connection very quickly, as you say, with people that we don't meet in person very often. But we just feel that authentic person coming through, and very quickly we can trust people. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, just an example that you've given. Yeah.
Really, yeah. But if it feels like you're hiding something or lacking transparency, or, you know, saying one thing to me and something else to someone else, like that's a trust breaker. And as leaders, like it's really unacceptable, frankly. Yeah. Like we can't operate that way. We have to be consistent and transparent, authentic, use all the words you want to use, but those behaviors ultimately are what's going to matter the most.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm just going to go off piste a little bit here because you did mention cell and gene therapy there. And I know the first time I heard it, I remember thinking, gosh, that is transformational. And I'm conscious that there are people on this call who may not be from the pharma or the life sciences end of things. Can you give us the short version of what cell and gene therapy is about, because it could impact them, even though there may not be in this world as such dealing with it every day?
Cell and gene therapy are essentially pharmaceutical products, like a pill you would normally get prescribed, that are created using very different technology and are either like human-based, like using your own cells, or modifying your cells to help often cure an ailment of sorts. So it could be a rare disease potentially that someone has where this gene therapy is actually going to modify their gene so that they no longer have the rare disease. And it's when you hear what I just said, it's like, yeah. Wait, what? Like, how, like,
exactly.
Whereas, you know, for so long, we've created band-aids, pharmaceutical band-aids on things. So you take this pill, it will maybe minimize some of the side effects that you're having from that disease that you are afflicted with. Now it's more about how do we cure based on gene editing or gene modification or augmentation. And then on the cell side, it's the same thing. It's basically injecting into cells to change the cellular makeup so that you're either cured or you have diminished disease in your system. So it's just really, really fascinating that so many people who are living with often debilitating or life-threatening diseases may potentially even in our lifetime be able to experience curative therapy.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I mean, just when you think of it, you know, in the context of life changing for people, I mean, science is just, it's wonderful in that sense. And it brings hope for so many, many people. But it's a fascinating area. And thank you for giving that very concise piece. That's really helped, actually, around understanding that. And I hope it has for other people as well. Jess, I just want to move on a little bit, because what I think it was the first time I did meet you, actually. And you were providing a facilitation for myself and a leadership group. And I have to say, you probably are one of the best facilitators I've seen actually in action. So and I think for me was this ability to kind of bring this this structure around this strategic objective and to corral people perhaps who were coming from many different perspectives into a place where we can walk out of the room and feel, okay, that makes sense. Now, today, I'm sure there are many leaders out there thinking, we must have a team away day. So you, in the capacity as someone who has worked with very many teams, leadership teams, senior leadership teams, if somebody is thinking about that right now, if there's a senior leader thinking about that, what advice would you give them, you know, before they actually embark on that to make a day or whatever length of time it is a valuable intervention?
A couple of things. One is, and I'm biased here, but I do recommend a facilitator to help guide your team, someone that's not on your team. It could be someone else in your organization. It could be an external consultant, but someone to guide the flow of your meeting that isn't introducing bias into whatever big questions you might be trying to answer or solve for in the session. Everyone's going to be sick of me saying the word connection, but I think you have to build opportunities for connection into those away days, whether it's as part of your lunch break or at the end of the day, something that enables people to just organically connect with one another. And then within the session itself, making it highly interactive. So people are, you know, we sit at our desks all day, every day. So being able to get into a room with your colleagues, thinking about whatever big business questions you need to reflect on, and teaming and pairing and grouping with different people that maybe you're not working with as much every day can be incredibly beneficial for us to just see other sides of a potential argument, to connect and to almost like spark that creativity that maybe we don't get when we're just sitting in the same place in front of the same computer every day. And I also think like work is work, but it can be really fun and it should be energizing. So thinking about in sessions like that, like, what do we want to accomplish? Like, what's critically important for us to accomplish? But how can we do it while also having some fun, thinking differently about the way that we get there? And that might be just surely out of the types of activities you're doing throughout the away day, the topics that you're covering, but injecting some level of fun into it. A recent strategic planning session I did for a You know, this is a billion-dollar organization. I came in with their executive leadership team, and we were building their 3-year strategic plan. I told them, as one of the first exercises that they needed to do, that they needed to kill the company.
Right.
And they were like, you know, I put like a tombstone on the slide, and I was like, "This is your, it's dead. Like, how did it die?" And it was a great way to just sort of like, and you know, I read that somewhere. Some, I didn't come up with it. It's not my original idea, but like, it got them thinking from a different lens. And so just don't be afraid to kind of be outside the box when you're building your away days. Cause again, that creates those memorable moments. I guarantee everyone went home and was like, "Oh my gosh, we were asked to kill the company today. Like, can you believe we did that?" The last thing I would say is plan the appropriate amount of time. So if you have one day, don't try to cram everything into the day. You can accomplish less than you want to accomplish 100% of the time. You need to give things space. You need to make sure you're making room for dialogue. So know that you need to, like, you definitely need to accomplish these, say, two things. Maybe you have a third thing in the agenda, but it would be okay if it happens at your next away day or at a, you know, separate scheduled meeting. When you go in and say, "We need to get 10 things done in this one day, and we have a whole day, oh my goodness," you're going to get almost nothing done. You're too scattered. There's not enough focus and emphasis applied to the things that are really critically important. So plan on less. If you can accomplish more, great.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, Jess, is sometimes, you know, some real critical conversations happen in those environments, and you probably have to give the space to them to let them flow, you know, until they become unproductive. Isn't that right? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And Shirley, the session you're referencing where we first met, I think that happened there. There was just some dialogue that needed to take place that there was never time, space, or room for. And so we would sort of adjust and adapt, like, all right, this next exercise we're going to do for a shorter amount of time, or we're going to cut this thing that was less important, in order to make sure that we got to the bottom of some of those critical conversations. Because otherwise, those things fester. They build as sort of counterculture things. They become cancers in your organization because you're not exposing what are often misunderstandings or miscommunications between people. But until you actually have the dialogue, you don't get there.
I love some of those points you're making. I particularly love that kill the company example, because you know what? I think that's a salutary lesson for many leaders, I have to say, because doing that exercise might actually prevent an accidental death of the company as
yes.
well.
So, totally.
So let's move on to something that is absolutely the topic du jour, which is the whole area of advanced technology, and particularly generative AI. And I'm just wondering, Jess, from your perspective, friend or foe, hopes or fears, where do you sit in relation to this whole area of generative AI in organizations, and guardrails, etc., that we need to be mindful of?
I'm absolutely a friend.
Right.
I love technology. I think mm-hmm. technology can, hell, I started a tech company. So yeah. Like, I think technology can absolutely help at work. It can help us do our work better. It can help us. I'm in the services business. It can help us service our clients more effectively. Are there watch outs? Are there ethical issues? 100%. But when I think about generative AI, I think about a couple of things. One is clients that I interact with, we're all moving fast, right? And it seems like the world just keeps moving faster. So I think that these tools, and there's so many fascinating tools available to us now from a generative AI perspective, these tools can help us move faster. They don't replace the human side of things, the people side of things, but they absolutely accelerate our ability to get to, like, the best answer in a really efficient way. And I think that then we're kind of passing that speed along to the client who's ultimately going to benefit from getting an answer faster. I also think that as people, we often feel overwhelmed. Like there's not, how many times have you heard someone say, there's just not enough hours in the day? And I feel as though generative AI is going to give us more hours in the day. We can get more done. We can get it done faster. We can get it done with a greater level of confidence that we've kind of reached all the data that we want to reach and the information that we need to get to create really sound arguments or solutions. I think we're headed in a really interesting direction. I think we've got to keep in mind that while AI is incredibly impressive, we still need the human touch. We still need to read it. We still need to kind of work it into, you know, its final state. But as like almost a boost, a turbo boost to any answer or any question that we're asking, I think it's an incredibly powerful aid for how we're going to get work done.
And Jess, if there are leaders who are sitting now listening to this and who may not be deep experts in the area of advanced technologies or generative AI, what advice would you be giving them? What do they need to be in this environment? What skills do they need to have? If it's not deep expertise, because presumably they will have those people with deep expertise around them, what would you be suggesting to them that they need to be in this, yeah, this very different environment?
I think right now, the missing piece around any AI tools is application and expectations of use within an organization. So as leaders, I think we need to be setting some guardrails for the team. And I think the guardrails should be enablers and not trying to kind of stop the use of it. But for example, if someone on your team is using ChatGPT to research something for your business, what expectations do you have of them for what they're going to do with that information before it's considered final? Do they print it out and is it done? Like, you know, are they send it off and say, yep, here it is? Are they taking their deep expertise and knowledge of presumably that space and applying, you know, another layer of enriching to that content? Like, I think we need to be prescriptive with our teams to say, that's great. If you want to draft an email using ChatGPT or Copilot or whatever it might be, but my expectation of you is that you're going to read it thoroughly. You're going to make sure it's in your voice or in the voice of the brand or whatever it needs to come from. My expectation is that you're going to change some words around because you're going to make it better because you know what we need as part of the goal of the effort overall. And those expectations, I think, aren't really spoken explicitly. And I think we're going to need to really start to lean into that.
Yeah. Jess, that's great. And sort of ending off almost on that very human-centered approach to the use of technology, I think is a great place, but a reluctant place, I have to say, where I need to finish this conversation. And it's been an absolute pleasure, an absolute joy, as it always is, Jess, to hear your thoughts and just to while away the past 40 minutes or whatever listening to you has been fantastic.
Amazing. Shirley, thank you so much for having me. I love your podcast. Can't wait to continue to listen to upcoming episodes and glad to be here.
Thanks a lot, Jess. Thank you.
And I want to thank you, our listeners, too. I suspect you've come from very different parts of the globe and from within different industries also. And I hope that you have found the discussion as insightful and as thought-provoking as I did. By the way, if you'd like to contact me, you can do that on LinkedIn or on shirleycavanagh.com. To our listeners, I hope this has been as useful to you as it has been for me.